Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
St. Louis, Mound City, we are going to have a great day today.
Now, Amy Markscore's Chris Ronji on KMOX.
Let's take it from the top.
Good morning, friends, and happy Monday. It is the Chris and Amy Show. How you doing? Good?
Great.
Good. So are we. We're doing great today. We have a phone number that we have decided for the first time ever in the history of the station to open up to you. 314-436-7900. Nobody's ever called it before.
Or texted
it. But Today it's going to start 314-436-7900. We also have a voice message feature on the Odyssey app. That's the place where you listen to the show live on your cellular phone or on your tablet or wherever you want to take it, KMOX.com as well. But send us a message. There's a little button that you click and you record a message and send it to us. So anything we're talking about today, you can let us know your thoughts. Also, we are streaming live on pretty much all the social media platforms like Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
In Los Angeles, the wildfires still raging as weather conditions are about to worsen again. 24 people at this point have been found dead. There are many more missing.
And Governor-elect Mike Kehoe becomes governor today as he is sworn in as Missouri's 58th governor. And shout out to our good friend John Hancock, who is in charge of organizing the entire inauguration festivities today.
And the Supreme Court is going to weigh on the TikTok ban, which is imminent. They could rule before January 19th. Again, Amy Markscores and Chris Ronji. We're both on Twitter, at Chris Ronji and at Amy Markscores. We want you to follow us and yell at us or whatever you want. Amy really likes it when you yell at her.
No, I do not.
She loves it.
I take it personally and go home and cry, so.
There's going to be some crying today at the inauguration.
Oh, the tears of joy?
Tears of joy for Mike Kehoe and his family.
I am so excited about Governor Mike Kehoe. I think he has the chance to be one of the best governors in the history of Missouri. And they've had 58.
Wow.
I didn't realize we had so many governors.
Wow.
You could line them all up.
Well, it's an old state.
Yeah, but it's not that old.
It's old enough to have 58.
True. Also, as we mentioned, the inauguration going on, but I love what Michael Kelly said regarding Governor Kehoe, that he goes, I'm a Democrat, and I get it that I live in a red state. However, he said, what a lot of times the city is used negatively. It's viewed negatively. It's a scourge on the state and all the policies in the city. And people sometimes in Jefferson City don't get it, don't get what St. Louis is like. And Mike Kehoe grew up here. He lived here. He has a passion for the city. I think that's awesome. And he grew up in North City. He gets the biggest challenges. He was, single mom. Working to feed all the kids. He started working at a young age to help contribute. So very cool. Hopefully he brings that relationship closer between the city of St. Louis and Jefferson City.
Yeah, I hope so. I think that the city of St. Louis certainly has, they deserve a lot of the criticism that they get.
Yeah.
The leadership deserves a lot of the criticism it gets. And what I want is for the governor and really all the legislators in the state to operate in good faith with city leaders and really try to find solutions instead of doing this political theater, political points game, which happens way too much. And it's not just on the local level. It happens on the national level as well. And people do it because they know it works. It gets the voters riled up and they are able to get what they want out of it. So I think that most people in the state, at least I hope, understand how important St. Louis is to the state. That really, I know we talk about Kansas City and how much KC has improved nationally. The profile of KC has improved. But really, this is the city. This is the number one city in the state. Historically, it has been. And if we could find a way to make it great again, we can really...
Oh, my gosh!
We can really help the state out a lot. But what it has to do, what we have to have are legislators, including the governor, who just want to operate in good faith and finding real solutions and not trying to win on TV.
Okay, speaking of people being riled up and speaking of the city of St. Louis, I have huge issues with what's going on with plowing the streets in the city of St. Louis. I get it. The first few days, be patient, right? We get it. The street departments, Missouri Department of Transportation, be patient, be patient. I was shocked when on Wednesday, Highway 40 at 270, Highway 40 West approaching 270, still had the left lane and middle lane completely snow covered. Thought, my goodness, how could this possibly be? Okay, we're going to wait Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. What I don't understand is the city of St. Louis not plowing, I guess they call it secondary streets, but to me they are major hubs of the city of St. Louis, not plowing Soulard. I have friends in Soulard who are sending me videos of the community in Soulard coming together every time someone has to go to work or go to the grocery store, pushing each other out of where they're stuck in the snow, helping them as they get down the streets. We're talking the major thoroughfares of Soulard. Not only has a plow not touched them since Friday, a plow hasn't touched them since Sunday. It's been 9 days. Where are the city of St. Louis plows? Why is the mayor not going, hey, this looks unacceptable that Soulard hasn't seen a plow for 9 days? Because I feel like the main thoroughfares in the city of St. Louis probably cleaned off enough. Now, 14th Street is still one lane. It should be two. It's one and a half lanes. You have to be careful because all of a sudden you lose half a lane. So if you are driving too wide, you have to stop because it's not fully two lanes the whole way through. Why aren't you clearing that up? Why around Tower Grove Park have they not touched Lafayette around Tower Grove Park? This blows my mind.
How is it out west? How is it when you get to Chesterfield, when you get past there? Because it was pretty bad, you know,
several days later, which was Wednesday, Thursday. Totally clear. Then the exit, that exit I showed on Timberlake was Wednesday. So it's getting clear. And by Friday, it was clear. By Saturday, it's totally fine. We're talking Sunday night. And they haven't touched Soulard. I don't understand.
Yeah, the last time we had a storm like this, wasn't it 2018 or was it 19?
Well, no.
Because we really haven't had one
like this, but the 2 years ago when the pipes broke and it was 0 degrees.
Yeah.
That they never touched Soulard. And my friend who lives near you lives on West Pine said they never touched West Pine. I said, even though there's a Whole Foods there, nope, never touched it. He said, we have been stuck because they have a little car. They were stuck until the snow melted. My friend can't take her car. It doesn't get out of Soulard. She can't get out. It's been 9 days.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the problem is. I don't know why it takes that long. It doesn't seem like it should take that long. Like, there's going to be some snow accumulation in places that takes a while, and then you have to wait for the weather to warm up for it to completely melt. That's always true.
40
but I don't know.
It
really needs to start getting into, like, the upper 40s and then into the 50s, which I think we're going to get at the end of this week. I think it's something like 45, maybe.
Do you remember when a couple of weeks ago when I went to the doctor, and I think you were here for this story, and I'm not great at like causing a scene. I'm patient. Crazy. I know it might be hard to believe, but I'm actually patient. My appointment was at 10:30, and I sat there and there was no front desk lady. I didn't see anyone. So at 10:57, I leaned through the front desk window, went, hello? And a doctor goes, hello? I'm like, hi, I'm out here. And he looked at me and I said, I had an appointment at 10:30. No one's here. It's 10:57. He's like, yeah, there's no one at the front desk. You would have been sitting here all day. Here, come on back. So I came on back, and that was where I thought, I'm patient. But if I had been patient, I would have sat there till 3 p.m., with the Soulard snow or around Lafayette Park or in the city or West Pine, you can say, well, be patient. And then after about 9 days, you realize, I don't think they're coming. No one's coming. Today is day 10 or tomorrow's day 10. no one is coming. Why is that? Soulard is not a random alley.
You know, you want to take a phone call? We have a couple of people who want to chime in on this.
Yeah.
At 314-436-7900, we visit with Russell, who is on KMOX. Good morning, Russell.
Yeah, question for Amy. Amy, have you ever lived in the city?
I have. Yeah, I lived in Dogtown, which also wasn't plowed.
Well, the city, I mean, it's an unwritten rule. They don't do secondary streets. And if they did do secondary streets, first of all, the reason they can't do them is because the trucks can't fit down the streets if there's parking on both sides. And then if they did go down the streets, then the people would complain because all the snow that they plowed would just trap their cars and they would have to dig themselves out.
So is it that they're afraid people are going to complain, or are you saying they literally physically have no plows?
No, they physically can't do it. Have you ever seen how big these trucks are?
Yeah, but also, you know how they do secondary streets in the county? They have small trucks, pickup trucks. Pickup trucks. The entire city of Clayton was plowed with pickup trucks.
I live in Sunset Hills. They have small trucks. I agree with you.
Yeah, so the city should get some small trucks, because how are people going to get to work?
Well, it's just not going to happen. Everybody that complains needs to stop complaining.
Disagree. Thank you for the call. I disagree because
you need to
complain because people around the city are seeing people in Sunset Hills where you live with the pickup trucks. They see Clayton with the pickup trucks. You're telling me with $500 million now, because if it was a money thing, it's not now. You can't get a pickup truck with a plow on it so that people in Soulard, in North City, who, like older people who can't get to doctor's appointments, that was a huge issue on KSDK. They were interviewing elderly people who said, they don't plow secondary streets. I can't get to my doctor's appointment. You're telling me you can't get a pickup truck with a plow?
Well, I don't know. But I do think it is a valid point that you can't have these bigger trucks go down these streets. And I don't know what the city's deal is, if they can contract to some people who have pickup trucks. I don't really know. But still, either way, if there's small streets, and some of the streets in Soulard are pretty tight, you would be blocking in cars. I think that's a valid point.
I don't, only because I've lived on narrow streets in Dogtown. I've seen narrow alleys in Clayton, and it's a pickup truck with a plow. And if it's too small, get one of those little
you're still going to block cars.
Bulldozers.
In.
Well, you can, but you block cars in Clayton. That's the thing. And you shovel out, but they don't say, well, we're not going to plow the streets because your cars will be blocked in. It does stink. You got to shovel, but Chicago does it. New York does it. It's just how cities are. If you live in the city and you park on the street, you know that when it snows, you are going to get either plowed in or you have to shovel, but at least you have hope that you can shovel around your car and then get to work or get to a doctor's appointment.
That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ronji. Leave us a message if you want on the Audacy app, AUDACY. We want you to download that app so you can listen to the show and then listen to all of the podcasts if you missed anything. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. We got a phone number, 314-436-7900. We were just talking about streets and some of the neighborhoods in the city that have not been taken care of, it looks like, and people have had thoughts, like Mark, who is in Arnold with us on KMOX. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Hey, I used to be a plow driver in the city, and now I live in Arnold. Arnold is fabulous. Our streets were cleared the next day. But in the city, what happens is the streets are so narrow and people have driveways in the back, but nobody likes to use them because they don't like to walk all the way to the house. So they like to park in front and go to the door. I understand that, but when you got a big plow, you come down the street. You know, there was times where I had to back up the street and there was a big, pile of snow that I couldn't push through because nobody parks next to the curb. They park like 2 or 3 feet from the curb, and then that negates what we were trying to do. One thing that I heard this year that they were going to get some smaller trucks, but they didn't order them until December. And they're not supposed to be here until February or March, and then they have to put them together, so they won't be ready until May.
So
we shouldn't have any snow problems in May.
Mark, they were ordering their own, for their own fleet, smaller trucks.
Yes.
So can they?
That was in the city. They were ordering smaller to get down the streets to address this, but they didn't order them until I think it was the second week of December.
Is there anything
Mark, is there anything
that you know of that prevents them from contracting out to people who just own pickup trucks with plows on the front of them?
Yes, there is, because it's a legal thing. Because if you run into a car, then there's a lawsuit. If you hurt somebody, then there's a bigger lawsuit. So they try to keep that within the city confines, because it's really hard to sue the city.
Mark, appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank you for the phone call.
And yes, it looks like Mark said, they spent $375,000 of ARPA funds to get three new chassis for the plows that are small enough to get residential streets. Why it wasn't done earlier, I don't know. I'm glad they eventually did it, but that also proves my point that you can get smaller plows.
Sure. Granted, I can imagine if they had committed back in the middle of the summer, hey, we're getting snow plows, people would have said, of all the problems we have in St. Louis, you're going to get snow plows right now, small snow plows? We haven't had a snowstorm in 5 years.
I don't know, because I will say... There's always going to be someone, but I will say the interview, Fox 2, our partner over at Fox 2, interviewed quite a few residents, like my friends who are lifelong Tower Grove residents, Soulard residents, and they have said for years it is a massive issue that they have raised to leaders that you can't get out. And I think they see the smaller plows, and it happens in Clayton everywhere. You know, there's people think of, like, I'm not talking about big homes in Clayton, I'm talking about all those apartments. Everyone parks on the street. And yes, it is, unfortunately, when you live in a city with street parking, you gotta be prepared to dig your car out. They still plow the streets in Clayton.
St. Louis, CJ is with us on KMOX. Hello, CJ.
Hello. Yeah, I was downtown this weekend at the auto show, and you figure when this auto show closed about 9, 10 o'clock at night, the snow plows would come by, and especially on the weekend it was warmer out, they would plow all the parking meters. No, that didn't get done. None of the parking meters were clear. You know, there's barely anybody parking on our street after 10, 11 o'clock at night. Nothing was done downtown, plowed. The sidewalks weren't clean. You'd walk through snow and ice to get to the car show, which brings money downtown. Mm. And then MoDOT, I heard their excuse for Friday, well, we didn't think we were going to get that much snow. So, of course, they failed again. I mean, I didn't see any pre-treating done. Usually when they spray the brine before it rains, snows, you know, you usually see the white lines on the street. I didn't see any of that.
I didn't notice it. If they did, CJ, appreciate the call. I don't notice if they did. You would think they would be out doing it.
Yeah, and we've talked so much about the side streets. Even Olive, massively wide street, right? Olive in front of our building, there's a school there. They did not plow the entire lane in front of our building, as you mentioned, like where the parking meters are, where people park, where people drop their kids off for school. So you have a school with elementary age children where the parents are now stopping in the middle of Olive and walking across a completely snow covered knee deep lane to get into school. Or, you know, the snow is taller than these little kids. Olive is a football field wide. I mean, it's so wide, right? Why would they not do that one lane in front of a school where little kids are walking? Just finish the rest of Olive.
Saw a, I think it was last, well, I know it was last week, but I think it was probably Wednesday or Thursday, when the streets had been plowed. And there must have been a lot of talk about how on the Missouri side, things weren't done particularly well. But on the Illinois side, just across the river, everything looked great. Because IDOT compared to MoDOT, a little bit different. And the governor over there had sent out one of those. It was a Metro East reporter, and I cannot remember who it was, who had tweeted out a screenshot of their daily, you know, the briefing or whatever they get from the governor's office, who threw a little bit of shade at the state of Missouri and said, yeah, if you guys want to talk about how southwestern or south central Illinois is looking in terms of the streets as opposed to what it looks like in Missouri, we're happy to talk about that. So
I heard nothing but great things about Illinois.
Well, I told you that I drove back from Chicago on Tuesday, and it was perfect all the way into the city. And it was fine crossing the bridge and getting to my place in the central West End. That was on the Tuesday after the snow had stopped.
And Andrew, I believe, I don't want to speak out of turn, said Alton was beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, Alton all the way into the city. I'm like, how'd you get into work? He's like, because Illinois is great. I only have trouble once I hit the city of St. Louis.
We had you guys had Mayor Parkinson from Granite City on.
Was
it Monday? Yeah, it was Monday of last week. He said, guys, we're dealing with a lot right now. We're trying to get the main arteries plowed. So please cut us a little bit of slack. And ultimately, they got to it in a town like GC.
We didn't even need to cut Illinois slack compared to Missouri. Illinois, we were looking longingly at the streets of GC.
That's how I always look at the streets of GC. Don't say bad. I had a person over the weekend call it Granite, you know, the other thing. And I said, I am going to throw you in the garbage.
Did you?
It was a lady.
Oh.
But I did say I'm going to throw you in the garbage if you don't stop saying it. Granite City is perfectly fine.
Well, they were.
Love it.
Granite City is driving right along and Soulard is stuck.
That's Amy Marks-Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. When we come back, a journalist and author based in Los Angeles, Mike Rothschild, is one of those who lost his home in the Eaton Fire as those wildfires rage. We're going to talk to Mike when we come back on KMOX. It is the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Good to have you with us this morning. We know, and we've been paying attention to the wildfires that started about a week ago in Los Angeles, in the area. Multiple wildfires it turned into, spread out over several miles. About 40,000 acres at this point have been burned. 24 people have been killed. We expect that death toll to rise when all of this is said and done. And a lot of the fire is not contained. Most of the fires are not contained. And a lot of people have lost homes, like our next guest. Mike Rothschild is a journalist and an author based in Los Angeles. You can follow him on Twitter at RothschildMD. Mike, it's good to have you with us today. How are you?
I've had better weeks, but we're here, we're alive, and that's what matters.
So can you take us back to the day that you found out that you lost your home? What was happening leading up to it, and then as it happened in the immediate aftermath?
Sure. So we started getting hit by the Santa Ana winds probably about Tuesday morning. And, you know, they were rattling our house. They, you know, tore a branch off our avocado tree, but we thought, okay, this is okay. I got home about 6 o'clock with my kids, and I could see the glow of what would become the Eaton Fire in the distance. But it was so far away that we thought, okay, it's going to get put out. Over the night, we saw the fire creeping over the mountains that are north of us, and to where we could actually see it burning trees. And we thought, okay, we got to pack some stuff. So we packed up some emergency stuff, a sort of random assortment of things. There was no thought put into it. And we tried to get some sleep. We figured, okay, we're not in the evacuation zone. 3:25 in the morning, our phones, my wife and I, our phones start blaring, get out now. Of course, by then, our power is out. It's freezing in our house. Our kids are freaking out. We're freaking out. I, for some reason, had the wherewithal to put on clothes. We threw a couple things in the car, and we drove. And that was the last time we ever saw our house.
Wow.
How did you go about knowing what to pack up, right? And in the moment of panic, of knowing what you could lose, of knowing you've got to save your kids, your family, how did you go about even leaving your home?
We were able to pack some things up before we were officially in the evacuation zone. So we were able to take, first of all, our documents, which fortunately were thrown into a couple of banker's boxes and were not organized at all. That paid off because we were able to just grab those boxes. A couple of pieces of artwork off the walls, our wedding photos signed by people who are no longer with us, baby pictures, electronics, chargers, things like that. But a lot of it we didn't take. We just didn't think about it. There's no rhyme or reason you just want to grab pictures, documents, pills, definitely, you know, any medication you might not be able to get. But we had no idea if we were going to have to evacuate, when we would be able to come back. We just didn't know anything at that moment.
Yeah, it's one thing I don't know if people think to do, but take important papers, because they're clearly things that you cannot replace. Did you, when you got the evacuation order, how much time did you feel like you had to get out?
We didn't really know. Basically, the alert was leave now. And so we took that as seriously as we could. And I think we were in our cars 10 minutes later. As it turned out, we were able to track the fire in our neighborhood a little bit. And we started about 8 o'clock in the morning. So about 5-ish hours after we evacuated, we started getting pings from our smoke detector that there was smoke detected in our hallway. So we had some inkling that our house was in some sort of danger then. And then about an hour later, the pings stopped, meaning our house was probably gone by then. So it was about 5 hours from when we evacuated to when we think our house caught on fire.
Mm. What about were you stuck in the traffic, the images that we saw of lines of cars trying to leave the area?
We were not stuck in traffic. Those images, I think, probably are more of the Palisades fire, which was to the west of us, mm-hmm. and then some of the fires in the Hollywood area, because those areas are very tightly packed in. Traffic there has always been awful. For us, because it was so early in the morning, there really wasn't a lot of traffic. But walking outside, you know, it's pitch black because all the streetlights are out. It's cold because it's winter. The air is full of ash and smoke. I mean, it does feel a little bit like Mordor from the Lord of the Rings. And, you know, cars are going every which way and people are running, and you don't have a lot of time to think. But fortunately, we weren't caught in much traffic.
Have you been able to talk to your neighbors?
We have been in touch with our neighbors really since the very beginning. We saw one of our neighbors' houses burning on local television, which was surreal. But some of our neighbors have been able to get back into the neighborhood. We tried a couple of times. We couldn't get near our house. But somehow a couple of our neighbors were able to get back, and they were able to take some pictures and some video and let us know that the entire house was gone. Photos that we'll need eventually for insurance documentation, because we don't know when we'll be able to get back in the neighborhood. It might be weeks.
Yeah, Mike, that's one thing. When you think of a tragedy, like a single house burning down, a lot of times that family, you turn to the community, you turn to your neighbors, you turn to your church or your organizations. But here an entire community was destroyed. How do you go about comforting each other, rebuilding, when you're all in that same boat?
Oh, it's a great question, and it's totally unprecedented. We have been in touch with our neighbors and our friends, the text chains, the Facebook Messenger chains, the WhatsApp groups. They are flying fast and furious. We've been trying to call people, even for just 5 or 10 minutes, to check in on each other. Altadena is a very tightly knit community. It's a very quirky little community at the base of the mountains. You know, a lot of historic architecture. It's kind of where a lot of Angelenos go to when they're tired of the traffic and the packed in feeling. So we're very tight knit, and we watch out for each other, and we've been in just constant communication with each other, you know, making sure people have filled out forms. Do people need things sent to them? Where are you? What do you need? It's a very old school kind of community feeling, and it's really coming together right now because we're just all staying in touch with each other.
Is your intention, and as far as you can tell, the intention of your neighbors to go back to that area when it's all, you know, when it's all clear, and then rebuild there? What do you think everybody's going to do?
You know, my sense from friends and neighbors that I've talked to is that we want to go back. We want to rebuild. Altadena is a very special place to us. The historic architecture, the open green spaces, the history of the area, that's all very important to us. We don't want to sell our land off to developers and have it get turned into condos and, you know, glass and concrete boxes. We want to represent our neighborhood, and we want to bring it back. So I think, you know, I can't speak for everybody, but for the people that I've been talking to, our intention is to rebuild.
When people who don't live in the area, maybe for the first time you're hearing about the Santa Ana winds and the kind of destruction they potentially hold, how aware at all times are those in Los Angeles in that area aware of fire and the Santa Ana winds and how you need to prepare for that in the same way that maybe in Florida you prepare for hurricane season?
Sure. You know, the Santa Anas are definitely a part of life. And a couple of years ago, we had a big branch of our avocado tree shorn off. We lost a few roof tiles. It's always kind of there this time of year, but it's never been like this. And, you know, my wife's family has, you know, lived in Pasadena for 50 or 60 years, and they've said they've never seen anything like this before. You know, we were never in the fire danger area. You know, we would get fires in the mountains. We'd get fires in the Angeles National Forest, which is north of us. And there was always a dividing line of several major streets, several blocks north of us. And, you know, north of that, you're in the fire danger. South of that, you really weren't. But the wind blew these embers for miles downrange. And if an ember hits a tree, it bursts into flames. The wind catches those embers, blasts those out. So you'll see one house that's totally wrecked, and then the house next to it's totally untouched. We always knew that there was a risk, but never, never anything like this.
We're talking with Mike Rothschild, who is a Los Angeles resident, a Los Angeles area resident, and lost his home in the Eaton wildfire. I know you've been paying attention to what's going on, but pretty immediately the criticisms of the mayor, Karen Bass, and the governor, Gavin Newsom, began. As you see it, what have they done wrong, if anything?
Well, I know people are angry, and I'm angry, and people are looking for someone to blame, someone who did this. You know, my work as a journalist, I cover conspiracy theories and disinformation, and so much of that material is based on blame and anger. You know, I haven't been paying enough attention to kind of the discourse around Gavin Newsom and Karen Bass. I know there was some anger at Karen Bass for not being in the country when the fire started. She's not actually our mayor. Altadena is unincorporated, so it's county territory. From where I'm sitting, the officials in our area are really doing what they can. I think Governor Newsom has really done what he can. I think the federal government is doing what they can. There's a lot of hiccups, but this is a huge, huge process, and it's happened so quickly that, you know, for me personally, I'm not as interested in blame or you know, casting aspersions as I am in just sort of getting through every 5 or 10 minutes. And, you know, the anger and the cause of this, I think that'll probably come later. But for right now, it's just kind of, do we have shirts? Do we have coffee? Do we have medication? That's what I'm focusing on right now.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess another question would be then, in the aftermath, I know CBS News this morning, their reporters were on the ground saying it's not a campfire smell. It's not just fire and smoke. It's very toxic, all the things that are burning. When you step outside, or if you were to go back to your neighborhood, is it you have to be prepared with a type of, not just a regular mask, but some type of gas mask, filtering mask as well, just to keep yourself safe?
Yeah, my understanding, and where we are, we're about 3.5 hours north of the fire now, so the air is beautiful here. But when we were evacuating, the air is full of ash, it's full of smoke, and it's burning chemicals, it's melted plastic, it's lithium ion batteries that have melted. So this ash is not a campfire. It's this sort of toxic slurry that you don't want to breathe in, you don't want to touch. You want a really well-fitting N95 mask. You want gloves. You want hazmat equipment. And one of the things that our officials in the area are saying is, don't start digging through the rubble because it is toxic. And this is material that gets in your lungs and can be extremely damaging, particularly for children. So if you're in the Pasadena area and you have gone back or you haven't had to evacuate, wear that mask and try to filter out as much of this stuff as you can, because this is a mix of all kinds of different chemicals and compounds that can be very toxic.
Mike, you have the opportunity, if you have the opportunity to tell people what you need, what your neighbors need, what is that?
You know, for every family, it's different. You know, one of the things that I'm really learning is people whose houses are still standing, it's not like they've just moved back in and have gotten back to regular life. It may be weeks or months before they can go back in. You know, in terms of what people need, I think, you know, if you have friends and family in the LA area, just reach out and ask specifically what they need. You know, do they need cash? Do they need gift cards? Do they need clothes. You know, every individual family's needs are going to be different. And so I think for things like this, I mean, certainly there are organizations that are doing relief. But I think if you have friends or family or people you know in the area, is just reach out to them. It means so much to get that text, to get that Facebook message or saying, hey, thinking about you, what specifically do you need? And a lot of people are going to be too proud to ask for money. But at least for my family, I can say, you know, if somebody offers something specific, we're saying yes. Just because we don't know what we're going to need tomorrow, in a month, in a year. So if you have friends and family in the area, reach out to them. It will be so meaningful.
Mike, we certainly appreciate your time. And of course, we are thinking about you and your family and your neighbors, and we are behind you. So if there is anything you do need from us, feel free to reach out. And again, thank you for giving us a few moments today.
I'm happy to.
Mike Rothschild, journalist and author based in the Los Angeles area, again, lost his home in the Eaton wildfire several days ago.
Just the images coming out of California are so devastating and overwhelming.
It's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. This is KMOX.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Ranj, I have bad news if you love hot dogs and if you happen to be in North Korea.
Wait, well, they're not. Hold on a second. You're not going to tell me they're bad for me.
Oh, no. We know that. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, we do?
We do. Kim Jong-un has banned hot dogs in North Korea, and cooking them is now the equivalent of an act of treason. And if you are caught cooking a hot dog or selling a hot dog, you will be arrested and sentenced to hard labor in one of North Korea's infamous labor camps.
Kim Jong-un has done this?
Yes, he has said he is trying to crack down on Western influence on everyday life of his citizens in North Korea.
I thought you were going to say he was saving them for himself.
You know what? 100% Kim Jong-un is eating hot dogs in his
palace. He's probably
eating
all the hot dogs.
Yeah.
My guess is they're tough to get. There's a limited supply, and he wants them all to himself.
Yeah, he's also banned some other foods.
You think that guy hasn't had a hot dog in his life?
Oh, this guy's had hot dogs. His people are starving, but he doesn't want them to eat a hot dog.
He puts Andrew to shame.
He also is banning some hot pot South Korean dishes because he doesn't want South Korean influence either.
I thought you were about to say Hot Pockets. He's probably eating those, too.
He's probably going to ban Hot Pockets because nothing says Western civilization like a Hot Pocket. Hot Pocket.
I used to love those.
Freedom. Hot Pocket is a symbol of freedom in America.
And hot dogs.
So are hot dogs. You are right. Anyway, awful. What an idiot. Kim Jong-un, I mean.
Amy, did you...
I mean, among other things. He has worse things than an idiot, for
sure. Did you watch any of the NFL playoffs this weekend?
So, a little. I caught a few things, not as much. I was too busy watching local LA news. I didn't realize we got it, so I was just watching local LA Fox and LA NBC.
Well, one of the games was the Philadelphia Eagles in their victory, so they advance in the postseason after beating the Packers. Sorry, Packers. During the game, I don't know if you saw this or not, but A.J. Brown, a star wide receiver, was on the sidelines on the bench and doing this.
So A.J. Brown, well, we're figuring that out. He's a little frustrated. Obviously, he hasn't seen too many balls today. He's going to read a little passage here.
I haven't seen too many people read books, but I've seen a quarterback eat a hot dog.
Quarterback's eating hot dogs.
Well, it comes full circle.
So apparently he was sitting on the bench and he was reading a book called Inner Excellence by Jim Murphy.
Yeah.
And since it happened, the Inner Excellence reviews on Amazon have just been nothing but 5 stars.
Really?
From Eagles fans who have flooded the market with their reviews of the book, saying A.J. Brown book club selection is a must read. Another one says it helped us beat the Packers.
That's amazing.
Just all these, they're all 5-star reviews of this book. And it is apparently a motivational book that he will sometimes pick up on the sidelines and he will read certain passages to help him stay motivated.
I mean, that's pretty amazing, and it is now, as you mentioned, with the reviews have been flooded, but it's also the number one bestseller among all books on Amazon.com. on Amazon.com. So it is the number one best-selling book among all books, fiction, nonfiction. So that's crazy that you brought this up, because yesterday while I was on my computer working or whatever, one of the Jar Kids said, he's reading a book. Oh my gosh.
That's
he's
it.
Reading a book. Yeah. And I was like, what are you talking
Usually
about?
Usually they're looking at the tablet. Yeah. They're looking at plays. They're looking at the playbook. They're talking to coordinators. This guy's reading a self-help book.
Yeah. Aaron Jar goes, bro, he's reading a book. Bro.
It's pretty awesome. And you heard Tom Brady on the broadcast saying, never seen that never before. Seen. That's pretty good stuff.
I do. Who ate the hot dog, though?
All right. We need you. We need you to use the Odyssey app and leave us a voice message. We need you to send us a text message. And if your thought is good enough, call us at 314-436-7900. It is Monday. Tell us what you regret from the weekend or the previous week. Mm. You must have some regret in your life. You've done something you shouldn't have done, or you didn't do something you should have. Whatever it is, send us your Monday regret. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.